So this is, again, it's kind of a longer story. It's from Genesis 42 through 45. Those are the chapters we're going over. And since it's so long, I'm not going to read them. I'm just going to kind of sum them up for you guys. But this is what's happened so far. So Joseph was betrayed by his brothers. He was the favorite of the family. He was being spoiled by his dad. He was betrayed by his brothers. He was sold into slavery in Egypt. He spent the last probably around 12 to 13 years being a slave and a prisoner in Egypt, which has kind of sucked. But where most people, that would destroy them, Joseph has actually completely turned his life around. And now he is grown up and he's become this really responsible guy. He has a great relationship with God. And what ended up happening is Pharaoh had a dream. And Joseph came and he interpreted the dream and he said, this is what the dream is. There's coming 7 years of prosperity that are going to be amazing. And then after that, there's going to be 7 years of incredible famine. And it's going to be so bad that if we don't start saving up food right now, we're all going to die. And so Pharaoh puts him in charge of saving up the food for the coming famine. And Joseph does. He saves up food for 7 years. He's been put in charge of that. And now in chapter 42, the famine is going to begin. And it's going to start really wreaking havoc with the land of Egypt and also the land of Canaan, which is where his family is. His family never confessed to their dad what they did. The brothers always said that an animal came and ate Joseph, and they never told him the truth. And Joseph is there, and think about it. It's been years. They think he's dead. He's grown up now. He was a teenager when they last saw him. He's in his 30s now. He's got a wife. He's got kids. He's going to look way different. He's wearing all these G'd out clothes. He's hanging out with his posse and he's speaking Egyptian. And so when they see him, they obviously don't recognize him. And so what happens is the dad, Jacob, he says, hey, like, we're going to starve. You need to go to Egypt. I hear there's some food in Egypt. Go to Egypt, pay the man some money, bring us back some food so that we can live. So the 10 brothers, they leave their youngest brother, Benjamin. We'll talk about why they leave the youngest brother, Benjamin, later. But they leave their youngest brother, Benjamin, with their dad. They end up going to Egypt. And Joseph immediately recognizes his brothers. He immediately recognizes them. But he knows that they won't recognize him. And so what he does is he says to them, like, I know you're spies. You're spies. You come to spy out the land. You're here for no good. And they're like, no, we're here. We're honest. Here's your money. We'll do whatever you ask. And he goes, do you have any family? And they say, yeah, we got a dad and we got a younger brother. And he says, why isn't your younger brother here? You're liars. I don't believe you. And he throws them in prison for 3 days. And then they come out of prison. And he says, so if you change the story, you're going to admit you're spies? They're like, no, we're not spies. We're telling the truth. He's like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm a just man. I'm a good guy. He's like, I'm going to take one of you, and then the other nine can go home. And if you come back with your youngest brother, I'll know you're telling the truth, and I'll be kind to you guys, and I'll give you food. But if not, then this guy's going to rot in prison for the rest of his life. So the nine brothers, they go home. They tell their dad what happened. And the dad's like, you guys are so irresponsible. You're terrible. You know, you lost Joseph. Now you lost Simeon, your other brother. And now you want to bring your youngest brother there so he could get taken too? He's like, no way, man. You're not going back. We're all just going to stay here. Sucks for Simeon. He's probably going to die. That's terrible. But we're going to be safe. We're going to stay here. We're not going to save him. And they're like, dude, like, we need to go back. And Reuben, who's the oldest, he's like, dad, like, you got to let me go back. Like, we got to save Simeon. And his dad's like, nope, no way, no dice. You know, I'm not going to trust you with another one of my boys. You stay here. Couple, years pass. And so Simeon's in prison for a couple years. And they're like, and finally they run out of food again. And their dad's like, dude, we're going to starve to death. And Judah, who was actually the one who sent Joseph into slavery, because the other brothers just wanted to kill him. Judah was like, no, we should get some money out of this guy. So he's the one that connived and sold him in slavery. Judah's actually been on a path of restoration as well. He ended up running away from the family. He ended up in the land of Canaan. This is all in chapter 38. He ended up in the land of Canaan, and he ended up marrying a Canaanite woman, and he had a couple kids. And these kids were incredibly wicked, so wicked that God had to kill them. And Judah was walking in the footsteps of his dad, didn't want to admit his own fault, so he blamed their wife for their death. And so he didn't do what he was supposed to do. He didn't marry off the wife to his youngest son. She becomes a little upset with him, so she comes up with a plan. She dresses up like a prostitute, right? She tricks him. He ends up having sex with her, and he's like, what do you want for, our little rendezvous? And she's like, hey, give me your driver's license. And that way I'll know that you'll come through. You'll give me a young goat later, and that will be good. So he gives her basically his driver's license, and then she disappears. She ends up conceiving. And then a couple months later, his friends come to him and they're like, dude, your daughter-in-law, she's a slut. She's had sex with somebody. She's got a pregnant belly. And Judah's like, man, kill that girl. In fact, he says, light her on fire, right? So he's pretty vindictive. And she ends up coming to him and she's like, hey, if you got to light me on fire, that's fine. But I'm pregnant by this dude. And she shows his driver's license to everybody. You know, this guy got me pregnant. I don't know who he is. Do you know him? You know, she's showing a driver's license to everybody. Everyone's kind of embarrassed. They're like, yeah, it's... Judah's like, yeah, that's me. You know, so he admits to it. He admits to what he did. And he actually says she was more righteous than I was. And he ends up taking care of her and her kids for the rest of her life. He doesn't have intimacy with her ever again. And so you see something's happened in Judah where he's becoming more of a responsible guy. And he goes back and actually starts living around his family again. And now they're about to starve to death. And Judah goes to his dad and he goes, look, Dad, we're going to die. Like, here's the situation. I'm going to die. You're going to die. My kids are going to die. All our kids are going to die. You need to send us back with Benjamin or else we're all going to die. You got to make that decision because Benjamin, if we go there and he gets killed, hey, whatever, we tried our best. But if we stay here, he's going to die anyway. So you got to make a decision. And the dad's like, okay, fine. I'll leave you in his custody. You know, you go, you make it happen, Judah. So you see the dad starting to trust Judah a little bit. So they go there. Joseph sees them. He ends up, you know, inviting them to dinner. They see that Simeon's actually been taken care of. Like, he hasn't been, you know, just like starved to death and like beaten and stuff like that. He actually took care of him while he was there. They set out a nice little dinner for them. They eat. They have a party. It's a good time. They're like, man, I think this guy's forgiven us. And then they start packing up their bags. They leave. And Joseph comes to one of his consultants. He's like, hey, man, put their money back in their bags and then take my cup, my silver cup, put it in Benjamin's bag and let them go. Right, so they end up leaving. They're all walking away. And then he sends his consultant to chase him down. He's like, man, why did you steal my cup? And they're like, ah, we haven't stolen a cup. He's like, yeah, you did. And they're like, well, tell you what, whoever you find the cup in, dude, whatever bag you find it in, kill that person. And we'll be your slaves forever. And he's like, okay. So they open up their bags and lo and behold, it's in Benjamin's bag. And they're like, oh, no, no, like, don't, please don't, you know, have mercy on us. They start freaking out. They all go back to Joseph. Joseph is sitting there and he's like, what do you want me to do with you guys? You know, you stole my cup. I give you all this kindness. You steal my cup. You know, you're going to have to face some consequences. And Judah comes and he comes to Joseph. He says, hey, man, like, take me prisoner instead. And Joseph says, nope, I'm only going to take slave the one kid that actually did it. You guys can go free. I'm going to take your brother slave, though. And Judah comes to him and gives him a very impassioned speech. And he goes, hey, man, like, you can't do this. It's going to wreck my family. It's going to wreck my dad. I can't see that happen to my dad. Take me as a slave instead of Benjamin. You take me as a slave. You let him go. And Joseph breaks down crying in front of them. And he says, man, I'm your brother. I'm your brother. Don't you recognize me? And they're like, dude, Joseph, it's Joseph. And they all start celebrating, and he goes, yeah, you know, don't feel bad about sending me to prison, because actually you didn't send me, God sent me, and he sent me to save all of you, so don't worry about it, go home, get my dad, bring him up here, you guys can live in Goshen, because I'm the big cheese now, you guys can live in the best part, you know, you can live in Beverly Hills, Egypt, you know, and it's going to be great, you know, I'm going to take care of you guys forever, and they're all excited, they go home, they get their dad, they bring him there, and that's where chapter 45 ends. So let's talk about a little bit, like, what's going on here? Like, why would Joseph do this to his brothers? Because it just seems so weird, doesn't it? Like, why didn't he just reveal himself in the beginning? You know, why does he put him through this? And some people at first blush when they read this story, they're like, well, Joseph must have just been a vindictive dude. He was playing a prank on him because he's just a jerk. And at first blush, it kind of looks like that, doesn't it? But then you really stop to think about it. You're like, okay, here's a couple factors where you got to look at this and say that's probably not what's going on. Number one, if somebody put me in slavery and left me there to die, and I wanted to get justice on them, I wouldn't conceal my identity. Does that make sense? Dude, if I am in the position of power, and somebody screwed me over and threw me in prison, and now they're at my feet groveling for food, man, that is like the ultimate justice. I would be like, yes, you know, there is a God. Here it is. I'd be like, guess what, guys? I'm Joseph, and you're screwed, right? I would throw them in prison for the rest of their natural lives, and I would let them rot. You know, that would be, that's justice. But he doesn't do that. In fact, from the story, you see that his intention all along was to reveal himself to them. But he wanted to wait for Benjamin to get there for a particular reason. The second way we could look at it is like, okay, well, is he just trying to forgive them? But once again, if he's just trying to forgive them, this is an odd way to do it, right? Why didn't he just come out and say, hey, I'm Joseph and I forgive you guys? But he's doing something that must fall in between those two things. He must be doing something that we in the Christian life, we're going to call it discipline. And discipline is different than justice, and it's also different than forgiveness. Right? Now think about when, if you had good parents, or hopefully you've seen a good parent in your life. A good parent, when their kid is acting up, they administer discipline to them. And discipline has a very specific way about it, and it has a very specific intent to it. Okay, what's the intent of discipline? What are you trying to do? You're trying to teach them a lesson so that what's going to happen in the future? That's right. So they learn from their mistake and they don't do it again. That is the purpose of discipline, meaning that discipline is not for the sake of the discipliner. It's for the sake of the one being disciplined. Do you guys understand that? Now, if you think about it, if it was for the sake of the discipliner, they wouldn't discipline, because discipline is hard. They would either just forgive or they would administer justice. Now, here's what justice is. Justice is, my kid is making a scene in a restaurant and it's making me feel bad and embarrassed as a father that everyone's now looking at me and being like, man, can't he have control over his own kids? And so I'm pissed off at my kid. So I'm going to go and I'm going to teach him a lesson. I'm going to spank his butt. And I don't really care if he learns a lesson or not. I'm just more concerned about the way that people look at me. Does that make sense? So it's not for the kid. It's really just because I just want to clock him because he's acting like an idiot, right? You know, so I'm like, bam, I smack him. Now I feel better about myself. And now we can all move on, right? That's justice. By the way, that's what the government does to us. When a cop comes and pulls you over and writes you a ticket, they're not like, I really hope you learn your lesson, you know, and that you drive safe. Because I'm so concerned. I'm so concerned about your safety and your life that it hurts me more than it hurts you, man. But I got to do this, all right? If you're going to learn from your mistake, I have to do that. I'm so sorry, right? That, no, never, right? The government is interested in administering justice. But here's the problem in our culture that we realize with justice. When you give someone justice, they don't tend to learn from their mistake. Right? We've learned that in the prison systems, haven't we? How many people go to prison and they're like, oh my gosh, I've totally learned my lesson. I'm never going to do any of that ever again. You know, like, thank you for sending me to jail, U.S. government. Now I love you because I know you care about me enough to throw me in prison. I'll never do that again. How many people actually do that? Like, none, right? More often, they go to prison and they become bitter at society, right? They're like, man, like, society doesn't care about me. They just want to beat up on me, so I don't care about them, right? And so I'm going to learn from prison how to not get caught next time, and I'm going to go out and I'm going to continue to do the same junk that I was doing to get me in prison. That's why people go to prison. They just keep going back, right? That's what's happened. So we've realized justice doesn't seem to work. It doesn't seem to work. Sure, when you administer justice to somebody, they get what they deserve, but they don't learn from their mistake. They end up repeating the mistake over and over again. Now, why doesn't justice work? It doesn't show love. It's out of anger, right? So you feel like no one cares about me, so that's just, it just affirms to you, right? If you're a kid, a lot of my friends, thankfully, my parents never abused me, but a lot of my friends in the Marine Corps, they were abused as kids. And when they were abused, they were just, it just continually solidified in their minds of, I have no worth, I have no value, nobody cares about me, right? I hate my parents, I hate the world, right? It just instilled in them a lot of bitterness and anger. And so they continued in their self-destructive patterns. Beyond that, when someone has justice administered to them, it's really easy to turn into shame. And this is what I mean. It's different between a parent who disciplines their kid and shows them, like, I don't hate you. I'm not angry at you. I'm just angry at what you did here. And in fact, I love you so much that I want to teach you from this moment. Justice shows, I'm not angry at what you did, I'm angry at you. What you did isn't the problem, you are a mistake, right? And you need to be disciplined, you need to be hurt so that you stop hurting other people. That's what justice shows somebody, that they are the problem. And here's the thing, if you have that mentality of yourself, that I'm the problem, you're never going to learn from your mistakes because you're going to feel cut off from society, cut off from anyone that could help you, and you're just going to continue in your own self-destructive patterns because that's the only place you could find solace. Right? You can only find some amount of peace in doing the things that are making you happy, which tend to be crimes. That's what justice ends up doing. So our society is moving away from justice. And now we're moving into this the society of approving of everybody. Like, you know how you fix people? You just approve them. You love the sin out of them, man. You know, that's how you do it, right? So, you know, your kid, he's a little turd, and, you know, he, like, starts yelling and throwing a temper tantrum at the table, and he knocks over someone's glass, and everyone in the restaurant's looking at you like, are you going to take care of your kid? And you look at your kid, and you'd be like, hey, Johnny, you know what? I just love you, okay? And it's okay. It's okay that you're acting like this. We all love you. You know, and it's okay, man. We know that you're having a rough day. And, you know, why don't you tell us about your day, why you're acting like this, right? And the little five-year-old's just like, woo! And they're just like flipping out and they're flipping stuff. And they're trying to talk to him in a calm way and be like, okay, he's just a little out of sorts, guys. I'm sorry. You know, like he'll get over it. It's okay, guys. Like don't listen to him. Like he's not usually like this. You know, we just love you, man. And then they go home and they just keep loving him. That's like a microscopic view of what our society is doing, right? So somebody goes and they do drugs or they sell drugs or they beat somebody or they abuse somebody. And our society is like, hey, they're coming out. Like, dude, we love you, man. Like, dude, don't worry about it. I know you did that, but that's the past. And let's give you a job and let's give you opportunities and let's give you everything you can to come back into society. And man, we'll give you therapy and we'll talk to you. We'll help you out, right? And we're loving them. We're loving them. We're loving them. Is that working? Why? They need discipline, but why isn't it working? Let me put it this way. Does that behavior show that what they did was wrong? No. So think about that from the mindset of the five-year-old, right? He's acting up, he's knocking over glasses, he's throwing a temper tantrum, and how do people respond to that behavior? Through what? Acceptance and love. So what is that solidifying in his mind? Is it wrong to throw a temper tantrum and to knock stuff over? Is that a wrong thing to do? No. You'd be like, that's not a wrong thing to do. You know, maybe I shouldn't do it in the future, but I mean, I seem to be getting a lot of attention from doing it, so who cares, right? So a criminal comes out of jail and everyone's like, dude, it's okay. You were a victim. You know, it's because of your past. We love you. We're not blaming you. It's not your fault, right? And so in his mind, is he thinking like, man, like it was really wrong what I did. You know, I hurt people with my actions, and I need to pay a price for that. I need to pay a penalty for that. No, which is why in our culture, we don't see discipline as loving anymore, right? We just don't see it as loving anymore. In fact, the amount of parents who are willing to discipline their kids is at an all-time low because we see it as an unloving thing. You shouldn't spank your kid. Dude, that's like abuse, man. Like, dude, you can't do that. You know, you should just love them. You know, and just listen to them. And the unfortunate thing is that by loving and listening to them, you're never understanding your faults. Now, there are positives to it. I would say that in a way, this mentality is slightly better than justice. And the reason why is because at least people who are encountering this mentality have a community of people they could talk to and hang out with. Does that make sense? At least they're accepted. The people who are experiencing justice feel completely ostracized from the world, and they just hang out with other people that are just like them, and they become worse and worse. So at least you have a support group in our society's mentality. But the negative is that they're not actually changing. So they're not actually getting changed. They're staying the same people, but they just have love now, as opposed to it. The people who are filled with shame, they never change, but they also, you know, think that they're crap. So they feel really bad about themselves. So what's discipline? Discipline is a loving justice. It's both together. It's love and acceptance coupled with justice simultaneously at the same time. That's what discipline is. And that's the only way that discipline can work. discipline without love is justice. Love without justice is just affirming someone in their sin. So we need a middle ground, and that's what the Bible calls discipline. So discipline is literally taking yourself and your own hurt out of the equation and simply looking at somebody and saying, what would be best for this person? What would be best for this person? No matter how it impacts me, no matter how it destroys me, what would be the best thing I can do for this person? Now think about this with Joseph. If he was vindictive and he just said, you know what? I freaking hate my family. They sold me into slavery when I was 17 years old, right? That's jacked up. Man, I'm done with them, dude. I'm going to throw them in prison. They're never going to see the light of day. Screw those guys, right? If he did that, would they have ever become better? No, they would have never become better. They would have been the same selfish, spoiled, jacked up people they always were. In fact, we know from the story, I'm going to read you guys a couple of verses to show this. We know from the story that they were still a mess. Let me read you chapter 42, verse 1 through 4. When Jacob saw, Jacob being the dad, saw that there was grain in Egypt, Jacob said to his sons, why do you look at one another? He said, indeed, I have heard that there is grain in Egypt. Go down to that place and buy for us there, that we may live and not die. So Joseph's 10 brothers went down to buy grain in Egypt. But Jacob did not send Joseph's brother Benjamin with his brothers, for he said, lest some calamity befall him. Now here we see that the same family dynamic that was alive when Joseph was there is still there. Look at how Jacob talks to his sons. His 10 kids, they're all starving to death. No one's come up with a plan. And what does Jacob look at? He says, why are you looking at each other? Right? Has someone ever said something like that to you? Like, dude, why are you looking at the ground? Like, the answer's there. You know, like, dude, why don't you do something, you idiot? Right? That's what he says. He's like, why are you looking at each other? Right? Go do something, you idiots. You know, and so he sends them on a mission. But notice who doesn't go with them. Benjamin. Who was the favorite before? Joseph. Now Joseph's gone. Who's the favorite now? Benjamin. By the way, Benjamin's a grown man. Right? Don't get the idea that Benjamin's like a little five-year-old. And he's like, dude, don't take Benjamin. He's a little kid. You can't take it. He would be around 20 at this point. Right? So he's a man, dude. And his dad's still like, dude, don't take Benjamin. He's a sensitive guy. Right? You can't take him on this trip. Something might happen to him. Don't do it. Right? So it shows, first of all, Jacob has disdain for his other sons. He doesn't like them. He doesn't trust them. And he is still favoring one of his kids. So the family is still just as broken as before Joseph left. Let me read you another verse to demonstrate this. This is 42, verse 38. So it's towards the end. So this is after they came back. After they came back and they said, we need to bring Benjamin or else he's going to keep Simeon forever. This is Jacob. He says, my son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead and he is left alone. If any calamity should befall him along the way in which you go, then you would bring down my gray hair with sorrow to the grave. So is Jacob expressing any concern for Simeon, who's in jail? No. But he's like, but don't take Benjamin, man. If Benjamin dies, I die. You know, my life is bound up with the kid. Simeon can die, and that is kind of bad. But Benjamin, man, like, he's the kid, dude. Don't take Benjamin. So we see that the family dynamic in Joseph's family is still broken. Justice wouldn't have solved that. Does that make sense? But forgiveness also wouldn't have solved it. Right? If they would have come to me, it'd be like, hey guys, I'm Joseph. And I know you sent me to prison. That was crazy, right? I mean, we all do crazy stuff in our childhood. You sent me to prison. Remember that? You know, I became a slave. It was terrible. I thought I was going to die. But I totally forgive. It's okay, guys. I totally forgive you. Come live with me. It's all good. Would that have taught him a lesson? No, because they would have been like, oh man, like everything works out, dude. You know, we sent him to prison, and now he's going to save our lives? Dude, like, it's a good thing that we betrayed our brother to death. You know, like, that behavior is totally cool, because apparently it works out in our betterment. You know, nothing's wrong. So do you see the problem there? Forgiveness wouldn't work. Justice wouldn't work. The only thing that would work is discipline. Now, how can we be certain that Joseph is ministering discipline, that that's what his intent is, and he's not just playing a prank because he's a man-child, right? The way that we know for certainty that this is what he's doing is because every single time his brothers come, he has to separate himself from them and start crying. Meaning he wants desperately to tell them who he is, but he's restraining himself. And we actually know from the previous chapters that he had already forgiven his brothers for what they did. He had already forgiven them. And he wanted so desperately to come to them and be like, dude, I forgive you. I love you. But he can't because he understands if I did that, they wouldn't learn. So right when he sees them, he knows that the family dynamic is still the same. And actually, it's kind of funny the way he knows. He was speaking through an interpreter. Joseph was speaking in Egyptian the entire time through an interpreter. And so his brothers thought, oh, he doesn't speak Hebrew. And so they're speaking in Hebrew to one another, and he's like, yeah, they're still a mess, right? So they're still talking about what happened. He's like, yeah, they're still a mess. Now, the next thing that I want to point out is I want to point out the problem with the brothers. What's wrong with them? This is chapter 42, verse 21 through 22. So this is after Joseph's like, you're spies. I'm going to throw you in prison. This is what they say to one another. And then they said to one another, we are truly guilty concerning our brother Joseph. For we saw the anguish of his soul when he pleaded with us, and we would not hear him. Therefore, this distress has come upon us. And Reuben answered them, saying, did I not speak to you, saying, do not sin against the boy, and you would not listen? Therefore, behold, this blood is now required of us. So we see, these are people that are held captive by guilt. They know that they did something wrong in their past. And now, look at this. Every wrong thing that happens, any misfortune that happens in their life, they're like, dude, this is because we betrayed Joseph, right? Every wrong thing that happens to them, right? They stub their toe. I betrayed Joseph, right? Like their car gets a flat tire. I betrayed Joseph, right? Everything that happens wrong in their life, they just assume this is justice, man. This is karma for what I did to Joseph, right? So they have this intense amount of guilt inside of their hearts. And here's the truth. This is the truth about all of us. All of us carry around a deep amount of guilt. And when tragedy befalls any of us, it's almost impossible, unless you are like an incredibly proud, sociopathic, narcissistic weirdo, to not think some part of your heart to think, this is because I did dot, dot, dot. You guys understand that? This is judgment for when I dot, dot, dot. In fact, we know that they actually believe that this is justice from God because, go to verse 28, they say this, Joseph sends them away and he actually leaves money in their bags. So they paid him money and Joseph left it in their bags and they're going back home. And when they see it, he said to his brothers, my money has been restored and there it is in my sack. Then their hearts failed them and they were afraid, saying to one another, what is this that God has done to us? So not only do they feel guilty, not only do they think everything negative that happens in their life is a result of judgment, but who do they think is angry with them? God. They're absolutely convinced that God hates them, right? God is like, dude, it's just my abounding love that I don't just wipe you guys off the face of the planet, like the smears you are, right? But I'm going to torture you a little bit during your life. But you know, but I'll let you live, and that's my mercy, you know, at its highest. A lot of us feel that way, don't we? In relationship with God, we're just like, dude, I'm pretty sure God hates me. Now, I'm pretty sure God is pissed at me, right? Any negative thing that happens in your life, yeah, I'm pretty sure this is a result of God hating me. And the reason why you feel that way is because you've never experienced discipline. You've only experienced justice. Right? When they came home, their dad blamed them for Joseph dying. He's been blaming them for the last 15 years. I don't know if any of you guys have had a parent maybe to a lower extent than that, right? But blame you for something. Right? You know, like when I was a kid, I never wore a jacket. Because it's Tucson. We live in Tucson. Come on, right? I never used to wear a jacket. My mom always told me, you're going to get a cold. You're going to get a cold. And of course, one of the times I happened to get a cold. And now, for the rest of my life, whenever I go out with a jacket, my mom's like, you're going to get a cold. Remember that one time? Right? She's just like, it's like over her head. And like, you could see that that's exactly what's happening in their family, right? Everything they're about to do, Reuben's like, hey, man, I'm going to go get some food. And Jacob's like, don't lose it on the way. And Reuben's like, I'm not going to lose it. That's what you said about Joseph. Like everything they say is like, dude, hey, I'm going to take my boys out for, you know, some fun in the park. He's like, don't lose one of them. Like, dude, why would I do that? Because you lost Joseph. Right? Like everything just rained it back to that. Just like, that's justice, right? What you did was wrong. You need to pay for it forever. And that's what's happening to them. They're absolutely convinced that everything wrong that happens is a result of what they did in the past. Guilt, shame, and condemnation and blaming of other people, right? Notice what Reuben says. He says, I didn't do that. You guys, I told you not to, and you did it. But was Reuben really innocent? No, he was there. He obviously allowed it to happen, right? So He's blaming the other brothers, though. He's like, dude, my life is a wreck, not because I did anything wrong, but because of you guys, right? You ruined my life. So you got guilt, self-condemnation, and then you have blame, others' condemnation, happening within this family dynamic again. Simple forgiveness will not cure that. Joseph just looking at them and being like, guys, I forgive you. That's not going to cure it. Because the really righteous ones of them will be like, no, I need to pay for my crime. I know you've forgiven me, but I can't forgive myself. I can never get over what I've done. I will never receive your forgiveness, right? It will not cure their shame. But the ones like Reuben who are like, dude, it's other people's fault. When Joseph forgives them, that just confirms what he thought in his heart, right? I knew my life wasn't my own fault. See, Joseph's doing great. You know, he's doing fine. It reminds me of the end of Home Alone, right? Where, you know, obviously they left Kevin at the house alone, which is really bad parenting. You know, like whenever you watch that movie, you're just like, dude, these people are like the worst parents, you know? And then they do it. Then Home Alone 2 comes out and it just confirms it, right? You know, they're just like the worst parents ever. But, you know, they come home and Kevin like took care of the house and stuff. And they're like, dude, look, the little dude's fine. You know, he's all right. You know, and it totally just confirms what they thought in their hearts, right? That there's nothing wrong with what they did. And then Home Alone 2 comes out, and you see that that's exactly the way they think, right? Like, the second time he gets left, they're just like, oh, he'll be fine. You know, he was fine last time, right? So it just totally confirms what they think. Whenever you have an attitude of blaming others and no self-responsibility, all forgiveness is going to do is going to justify your blaming of others. If you have a mentality of self-condemnation and always blaming yourself, forgiveness is not going to solve that problem either, because you're going to always feel like, I deserve blame. You're never going to be able to forgive yourself. Now, let's talk about how Joseph actually does this. How does this discipline work? How does it work? The first thing is that he layers love with conviction. That's what he does. He doesn't just come out and convict, and he also doesn't just come out and forgive. He does a little of both. Right? When they first meet him, how is he towards them? Convicting, right? He's mean. He's like, you're spies. I've thrown you in prison. You're done, right? And they're just like, oh, man, this is because of what we did to Joseph. That's what's going on in their mind. Then the second time he meets him, how is he? He's nice, right? Hey, come into the house, man. Have a party, dude. I missed you guys, right? He's all loving and kind, and they're like, what the heck? Who is this guy, right? And they're kind of weirded out by it. You see, what this does is the proper amount of love mixed with the proper amount of conviction equals discipline. And only your Father in heaven knows the proper amounts to mix. I am not a father now. I know that when I look at my dad's discipline of me, there were some times where I can honestly say that he disciplined me. There were some times I would say that he administered justice to me. And there were some times that he ministered just forgiveness towards me. So he wasn't perfect. And I know for a fact that when I'm a dad, I'm not going to be perfect in this either. I'm going to blow it a lot. I know that. Only your Heavenly Father can administer discipline perfectly. The perfect amount of love coupled with the perfect amount of conviction gives you discipline. So here's what that looks like in your life. When wrong things happen in your life, you will automatically assume, this is because I did something wrong. That's that conviction. But then that is coupled with God giving you affirmation and love. So meaning when a Christian is going through discipline, when they're going through punishment, when they're going through tragedy inside of their life, they know this is discipline, this is God trying to make me more like him, because there are parts of my heart that are wrong. But if you do not couple that with an understanding of God's love for you, it's just going to break you. Then all that is justice. You need to be able to couple it with the right amount of forgiveness. However, if you go into a church that's just like all prosperity and they're like, dude, if you're suffering, you know, that's just because God dropped the ball and he just loves you and don't worry about it and just go through it. You're going to go through the discipline. You're not going to learn anything from it. You need the right amount of conviction coupled with the right amount of love, and that is going to bring about discipline and genuine change. How much of which do you need? Only God knows that. Some of us are more like Reuben. We tend to just blame other people for our problems. That kind of person needs a whole lot more justice than other people. Other of us are very much the self-condemning type. We're just like, man, I suck. I'm the worst ever. you need a lot more love than the people, than other people. You don't need a whole lot of conviction. You know, my wife's not in here, so I could say this about her. She is very much the self-condemning type because she has just such a precious heart. Right? She takes everything on herself. And so for her, she doesn't need like any conviction. Right? She doesn't need anyone to come up to be like, hey, Emma, you know you messed up there, right? She's already beat up herself for like 17 days before anyone would say anything like that, right? She doesn't need conviction. She just needs love. Some of us are like that. And here's the thing. As a parent or as someone who is administering discipline, you need to know how much of which your kid needs. The problem with parenting is sometimes we think it's a formula. You're just like, dude, this guy needs this amount of discipline and this amount of love. This amount of discipline and this amount of love equals right parenting, right? And they think that that works for everybody. But it doesn't work for everybody. Churches are to blame with this too. Sometimes as a pastor, I'm like, man, you know, I think I'm being a little bit too, you know, accepting and loving. I need to give a fire and brimstone sermon, man. Like I need people to know that their actions have consequences, and I need to rock their houses. I need to let them repent, you know. And so I come in and I'm all hard. I'm like, dude, this is gonna work. And then someone comes up to me later, they're like, dude, I don't think I'm saved. And I'm like, oh no, you know, like, dude, like, man, you're saved. It's okay, you know. That was more for people who obviously are taking things more, you know, liberally than you are, you know. And so it's hard. And so as a pastor, I need to think that way of like, man, like, am I able to balance the right amount of love with the right amount of conviction? And that's why sermons are so difficult. And that's why I always tell people, I love the fact that I'm able to give sermons. At the end of the day, sermons aren't that important to the Christian life. They're important, but they're not that important. There are more important things. Because sermons are so general, right? I can't get specific with any of you guys in a sermon. Because I don't know what's going on in your life. I don't know how to apply the love and the conviction that's necessary for you in a sermon. Only God knows how to do that. That's why the most amount of growth that you're going to have as a Christian is in group settings where you're able to confess to people and to talk to them about what's going on in your life, or one-on-one counseling sessions where you're able to confess to people and talk to them what's going on in your life. That's the only way that you're going to start learning this balance in your own life. What do I need? Do I need more conviction or any more love? And that's what you need to focus on the Bible. Some people, dude, when I talk to them, I'm like, you need to read the book of James, right? Because James is definitely the slap upside the head of the Bible, right? That book, you read it, you're going to be like, yeah, I suck, right? You need to read the Sermon on the Mount. You need to read the book of James. You need to understand that what you're doing is wrong and there is justice and consequences for what you're doing. Other people, I'm like, you need to read the book of Ephesians, right? You need 1 Corinthians 13, you need the book of Ephesians, you need Philippians, you just need the love of God. You need Song of Solomon, you need the Psalms, that's what you need, right? You need to focus on the book of John, right, and Jesus' loving sermons and stuff like that. That's what you need in your life, right? And some of us need to really focus on those sections because you're like, man, I always beat up on myself. Well, you need to really start injecting love into your life. You need to really start focusing on the love that God has for you. Other of you, like I said, you're like, man, I tend to just blame other people. I don't really take responsibility for my actions. You need to read like the book of Judges, you know, or like any of the prophets, right? Read those books, read James, read, like I said, you know, Matthew 5-7, you know, read passages like that so you can know that, man, like my heart is wrong and I need conviction. I need something needs to break inside of my life. Right, so if you sit through a sermon and you're like, and it just breaks you down, you feel like, I am terrible, I'm the worst person ever, I don't even know if I'm saved. Chances are you listen to a convicting sermon and you're just a self-convicting person. And you need to balance that with love. However, if you sit through a sermon and you're like, I think I'm perfect, you need to balance that with conviction. You tend to be a blame person, you need to balance that with some conviction. You go home and read your Bible and understand the right balance. And like I said, the Spirit will administer that as the Spirit knows you need it. But you need to be praying, you need to be asking for that. So those of you guys who are self-condemning, don't feel weird when God starts pouring love on you. Know that that's what you need. If you don't have that insertion of love, you're not going to change. Those of you who are more just like, you got the love passages down, man, you need to allow the Spirit to convict you. You need to pray for that. God, convict my heart, man. Make me sorrowful for what I'm doing. Because I don't feel bad at all about what I'm doing. I'm more like that way, by the way. Right? I'll sin and I'll be like, dude, I don't think I did anything wrong. I won't feel bad at all. I'll make my wife cry and be like, oh, she's being sensitive, you know, she's being overly sensitive. That's not my fault, right? You know, and I'll always blame because I'm selfish and I'm proud and I need that conviction of God in my life. I need to pray for it, even though I don't want to pray for it. I need to pray for it if I want to actually change. Now, the other thing that I'm going to point out about what Joseph did, and this is interesting what he does, because this is what God does in our life too. If you notice, he set up the same exact scenario that got them in trouble in the first place. Now, if you actually read it, what happens is they go to the supper with him, and Joseph intentionally gives Benjamin more food than all the brothers. So he intentionally shows a level of spoiling to Benjamin, which is definitely, the brothers definitely got that same bitterness in them of like, man, it's just like Joseph. Dude, Jacob favors him. This dude favors him. He doesn't even know us, and he's favoring him, right? So they're in their minds like, they're stinking Benjamin, right? And he sends them home with the chalice inside of Benjamin's bag. Remember what he says to him? All you got to do is leave, right? Let this guy take the fall. You guys just go. Wasn't that the exact same situation that they were in with Joseph? They're like, dude, all we got to do is leave this fool, right? If we just leave him, tell him that he got killed by animals, our dad can't get mad at us for that. It was going to fix the entire situation. He sets up the exact same scenario that got him in trouble in the first place. But this time he's giving them the opportunity to do what? The right thing. He's giving them the opportunity to do the right thing. God is a master of this. It's almost like, you know, this, it proves that God has just a hilarious sense of humor, right? Because there will be times in my life where I'll be in a situation and I'll be like, oh my gosh, like I've done this before. Like I've been in this exact same situation. You know why you're in the exact same situation? Because God wants you to make the right choice this time. He wants you to learn. God does this all the time. And Judah does it. Judah goes to Joseph and he says, you know what, man? Don't take him. Take me. Let my life be forfeit because I don't want to cause my father to suffer. That's his reasoning. He said, I don't want to cause my father to suffer. Even though Benjamin is guilty, take me instead. I give up my life freely. See, in the beginning, they gave up Joseph's life for their own. They sacrificed him for their own sake. Now Judah's finally saying, I want to sacrifice myself for the sake of my brother and my father. He's finally making the right decision. Little does Judah know that his great, 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 great grandson is going to be a guy named Jesus of Nazareth, who, even though his brothers were guilty, his brethren were guilty, he was going to say, I will take the price. I will call my life forfeit for their sakes. So Judah doesn't even know it, but he's actually exemplifying his greater son and what he's doing here. And this is the moment where Joseph finally reveals himself. It is through the sacrifice of Judah, it is through Judah finally getting it right and saying these things that Joseph finally reveals himself. Because it's only through the sacrifice of Jesus that we finally see justice and mercy met in the perfect combination to forgive us. If God just looked at humanity and says, hey, don't worry about it, guys, I forgive everything, that would never teach humanity consequences. It would never teach humanity consequences. I talk to my buddy at the mosque all the time. His name's Ahmed. And in his theology, he's like, yeah, dude, Allah just forgives us. He just forgives us, you know, because he's all forgiving, most merciful. I'm like, well, what does it cost Allah to forgive you? It's like, nothing, he just forgives us. I'm like, don't you think that's going to lead to, like, licentiousness? That you know that Allah just forgives you just because he forgives you? Like, there's no consequence, there's no price to pay. He just forgives you? And he's like, well, I mean, that's just, you know, he loves us. He's merciful. I was like, you call him loving. You call him merciful. But at the end of the day, he's not just. You cannot tell me that your God is just. He is just, he just gives mercy like it's no big deal. That will never, ever, ever teach humanity the right lessons. Right? It's going to keep you spoiled. It's going to keep you going down your right path, the wrong path. But then you go to, you flip the corner. By the way, he's not in the majority of Muslims, by the way, because if you read the Muslim scriptures, you'll see that Allah's mercy ain't that merciful, right? You know, but he's in the minority, right? But that's the way he thinks. But then if I go talk to, like, say, a Jehovah's Witness who never thinks that they're saved, even if they're doing everything correctly, like, I may not be saved. You know, like they just constantly think Jehovah's just out to get them, right? Jehovah's just got this wrath over them and he's just going to get them, right? And those people, dude, they're so afraid of God, they don't know what to do. And I'm like, what about the sacrifice of Jesus? Like, doesn't that mean anything? And they're just like, well, yeah, he died, but that's because we suck, and we got to keep serving him. We got to keep, you know, we got to live up to his sacrifice. And they look at the sacrifice of Jesus as a limit to live up to. Does that make sense? They're like, dude, Jesus did that almost as like an example of like, you need to give your life that much to him because he did that for you. And I'm like, dude, that's hardcore, man. I'm like, dude, those people are like living in fear every step of the way. And you know what you see in people that live like that? There's statistics all over that people that live like that have the most hidden sin of anyone. Right? You know where porn is most viewed in the country? In the places that are most religious. Utah, which is the like Mormon capital of the world, they have the highest porn viewage per capita of any other state. Isn't that crazy? You go into places of the world, any place, you pick any place in the world, the Vatican and Rome. You go into places that are heavily religious, they have the highest porn viewage per capita. Why? Because they're trapped. They're trapped by their guilt and their shame and their insecurity. And so all they know how to do is just cover their sin and not talk about it. And so it just grows and gets worse. So do you see why the cross was necessary? The cross demonstrates to us in no uncertain terms the seriousness and the consequences of your sin. Be not deceived. Sin brings death. That's what the cross demonstrates to us. Sin brings death. That's what's coming to us. But the cross simultaneously shows us that God so loved the world that whosoever should believe in the Son should not perish but have everlasting life. You see how beautiful the cross is? That is God's way of administering discipline to his people. And now, no matter what happens in your life, no matter what tragedy happens in your life, you're not going to look at it like Joseph's brothers and say, like, God's against me. You're going to look at it and you're going to be like, dude, God is for me. Dude, because if God is disciplining me, that means I'm his son. Right? So many people that I talk to that are going through consequences of their sin, they're like, dude, I don't think I'm saved. I'm like, actually, that's proof that you are saved. If no consequences were happening to you, God wouldn't be your father. God only disciplines his sons. He only disciplines his sons. Hebrews 12 says that. It says, God disciplines those he delights in. Discipline is a sign that God delights in you, that he loves you. Right, so we're going to go through our lives and we're going to understand. You understand how unshakable you'll be if you understand that? You're going to look at everything and be like, dude, come on cross. Come on affliction. All you can do is make me more like Jesus. All you could do is make me more like Christ. All you could do is demonstrate to me how much Jesus loves me. Because he bore pain and he bore suffering for my sake. Right? And I know that my Father loves me because he does this for me. But there's another side to it, right? The suffering of the wicked is just going to make them worse and worse. This is a quote from St. Augustine about suffering. He says, wherefore, though good and bad men suffer the same, right? We all suffer the same. We all have the same thing. One person looks at it as discipline. The other person looks at it as justice. He says, we suffer the same way. We must not suppose that there is no difference between the men themselves, because there is no difference in what they both suffer. For even in the likeness of the sufferings, there remains an unlikeness in the sufferers. And though exposed to the same anguish, virtue and vice are not the same thing. For as the same fire causes gold to glow brightly, and chaff to smoke, and under the same flail the straw is beaten small, while the grain is cleansed. And as the leaves are not mixed with the oil, though squeezed out of the vat by the same pressure, so the same violence of affliction proves, purges, and clarifies the good, but damns, ruins, and exterminates the wicked. And thus it is that the same affliction, the wicked detest God and blaspheme him, while the good will pray and praise him. Right? So the same instances that would be looked at as God disciplining, as God judging you or punishing you, the Christian looks at as discipline. Your perspective and what happens in your life has everything to do with how you're going to respond. And Joseph saw it this way. When his brothers confronted him, remember what I said? Joseph said, you didn't send me here, but who did? God did. God was disciplining me. God was looking out for me. He saved me, and he saved all of you as a result. And because Joseph received that discipline and it really did perfect him and cleanse him and purify him, he gave the same gift to his brothers. Where at first glance, we'll look at that and be like, Joseph was a jerk. From the lens of God, Joseph was looking out for his brothers. And that leads to the final point that I want to make to you guys. It is not good to reconcile with unrepentant people with destructive patterns. Another reason why Joseph waited for Judah to say that is because if you reconcile with somebody who has hurt you that deeply and just say, hey, you know what? I forgive you. No big deal. You're setting yourself up for future abuse. That's what you're doing. You are setting yourself up for future abuse because you haven't changed that person in the slightest. And you're now giving them the opportunity to say, keep abusing me. It's okay. Yeah, just keep abusing me. I would never, ever, ever look at someone in my life who's been physically abused or mentally or emotionally abused by someone in a severe way and say, you need to reconcile with that person. You need to make things right. I would never say that because the Bible doesn't say that. The Bible says that reconciliation happens when somebody repents of what they've done wrong. Joseph understood that. He forgave his brothers, sure, but he didn't reconcile with them until he saw for himself that they had changed, that they had the same scenario of being able to abandon their brother, and they did something different, proving that they had changed, proving that they had repented by the grace of God. So that's something I'm going to leave you guys with. But let's pray, and if you guys have questions, you could ask them. Dear God, I want to thank you again for this story. I pray we learn from this. God, help us to find joy in your discipline, God, knowing that these things, that these tragedies that have once made us more bitter and more cold, I pray that these tragedies in our life would be seen from the lens of discipline, God, that you are doing this because you love us and you care for us. God, not saying that these things aren't tragic, not saying that these things aren't bad, but that you can make all things for our good, Lord, because you love us. In your name, amen.